It is 6:37. We're going to call the meeting to order. Welcome to the August 28, 2019 regular meeting of the Kingston Port Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name and please keep your comments to 3 minutes. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to a regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. So can you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I think it's over there somewhere.
Yeah, through there.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So can I have a motion to approve the agenda as written?
So moved.
And I will second with a minor correction that the bottom of the agenda says the 26th. It's the 28th, so let's make that minor correction there. But everything else is great.
Does the computer automatically put the date it's created? That's what I was thinking, yeah. Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Nope. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes. Public comment period. Michael Chesmore.
3 minutes?
Yes, 3 minutes.
Okay, let me start off with the boat launch does not belong to the port. It belongs to the community. It was given to the community by Ira Peters years ago, 1959. And the boat launch had a fee on it when I came back from overseas. And I hollered about that, and the people said, well, you know, we didn't know that. So it took several months until the port people put it together that they could collect money from parking. But before the marina was here, we parked up the street, took our trailers up there. Somebody's mom drove us all down to the marina. We jumped in our boats and fished all day. 4 days they gave King Sam to Area 9. One of those 4 days, that boat launch was closed. Why? All you had to do was put a sign up saying, don't park your trailers here or we'll impound them. But you guys didn't give us an option. You closed the boat launch. Port commissioners lied to me, or the tribes did. The tribes said they don't know anything about those mooring balls out there. They didn't say that they wanted them out there. I don't think the tribes would authorize those being put on the East Beach. That's a lee shore. Does anybody know what a lee shore is? Mm-hmm. Let me help you with that. The weather comes mostly out of the south, and it picks up a big head of steam coming down there, and that beach right there is exposed. You have less than 100 yards tied up to those mooring balls before you have to get your engine started. If a mooring ball fails or your cleat fails because of the boat going 6 or 8 feet up and down, lee shore. I've asked the last three sets of port commissioners, move those mooring balls into this protected cove. And I hear, oh, what a good idea. And they write it down, and I'm not going to say names, but I cornered one of the port commissioners right here at the front desk and said, hey, what about moving the mooring balls? What about this? What about that? Well, I wasn't at the meeting. I said, I don't try to open my mouth at a meeting unless I make sure all three of you are here and the manager slash executive director. Getting close to that 3 minutes.
Yeah, not one more.
Okay. Should I charge you guys money to come in and spend money in my stores? Why? Seattle doesn't charge. Olympia doesn't charge, Oak Harbor doesn't charge, Paul's Boat doesn't charge, but we have to get $5 from a tender. I'm not talking about a boat with rods and reels in it, Ray. We know the difference between a tender and a fishing boat. Fishing boat gets the $5. Tender, encourage them to come in and spend their money. Don't charge them to spend the money. I have more, but I'll save it for the next meeting. Do I have any time left?
Just about 20 seconds.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike, for your comments.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Christopher Carter.
I was once told by an attorney for a board this wasn't the room to campaign in. But I see it's the room to preach in. Y'all have me to stand up and pledge allegiance to a flag, an imaginary flag. It's not in this room. We don't serve an imaginary system. We serve something real. Because there is a fee on the dinghy, I thank y'all for having that fee. It allowed me the opportunity to find a full boat. We had a Navy veteran on the board. He was dying of cancer. Hospice worked with us through the port. I don't believe I would have got this from Kingston. I heard that she's going to be chair. I won't hear things. As we work our pens, that's working through the heart. There's more love that I experienced in Poolsville working with Robert Kinslow than I met here. There's a big Christmas hoopla. I was born and raised with tradition. And I was afraid I was raised with an understanding when it goes overboard. When we work our pens, we work them from the heart. You work them from the pocketbook, you lose your way, you get blinded. Good things are missed. I've been helping Michael out there on his place and running around town. He's got a couple of veteran friends. I've been running around helping them. He's got to come and pull his own and pick me up because I don't have $5 to give. I guess that's my 3 minutes.
Can I have this overtime?
You've got an extra minute.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Christopher.
What about a dive park? Edmund's got a fine dive park. We have the makings of a great dive park out there. There's a couple of vessels on the bottom, other structures down there that attract fish into the area. Dive park sound good? I want to go underneath my boat. I heard that I can't hire somebody to dive under there unless they're licensed and certified. I need to be certified to go underwater. That's a question.
For what purpose?
Well, to look at the bottom of my boat.
Yeah. That's a different matter when you're talking about boat cleaning. Not
cleaning. Yeah. I want stuff removed from the screw because mm-hmm. if I don't get stuff off the screw, you know,
yep.
it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I want to take this boat to Port Townsend, haul her, scrub her butt, paint her, and splash her,
mm-hmm.
and then go up north to give my money to the Prime Minister or the Queen or King or whoever owns that dirt north of us.
Right.
And catch some real fish. So do I have to be certified to go?
Well, I guess it depends on where your boat is. Depends on where your boat is, I think.
It's down on Charlie Pier.
Yeah.
Unless you guys are going to chase me out of here.
Mike, you should come in and talk. Sit down and talk with Greg. Okay?
It has more to do with either people diving on their own boats versus if you're contracting somebody to dive on the boat. If you have people that are commercial divers, they're diving after license and bonded. That's not uncommon. And everybody pretty much knows the rules. That's not to say that people don't just go and dive on their boats without our knowledge and they can do that.
Well,
if you're diving
on
your own boat, it's different, but it is, you know, there is safety because I've known people that dive and I've seen experienced divers get sucked into the wheel and killed after 30 years.
Wheel shouldn't be turning.
But I'm just saying, you know, even people that are knowledgeable because just somebody next to you does something wrong and you're coming out over there. So we just try to be safe, that's all. It's not that we're preventing people from being able to go on their own boat. And the other thing is we just have to follow the rules and regs from the Department of College or whomever, and they're not impossible to follow. And I know what you need to have done, so we can work with you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And thank you, Christopher.
Yeah.
And Christopher.
Any other public comment? We're going to move on to our consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. We have four items.
Four items.
Approval of August warrants, approval of Allport meeting at Brownsville on July 29th, approval of an increase to the Hearthstone CPA group, and approval of application to Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council.
I move that we adopt the piece of the agenda presented.
Thank you. I'll second that.
Any discussion?
Nope.
Yeah. I just want to note that we're not approving the Allport meeting. We're approving the minutes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yep.
Meeting minutes. Thank you. That's true. So I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Go on to item six, financial report. Janice?
Good evening. Dennis Krieger, Hearthstone CPA Group. The commissioners know me. To my left is our managing partner of our firm, Larry Hurley. And as most of the commissioners perhaps know, I know Greg knows, but I am in the process of moving towards retirement and will be retired at the end of the year. I've been coming to these meetings for over a decade. And it's time that I pass the torch to Larry, who's more than qualified to take over the responsibilities that I have. And so I want to introduce him to you all. Larry also is a taxpayer in the district, so,
good to hear.
But he doesn't get under the clean it. Okay. What I want to talk about tonight is the transition that the port has made relative to the financial reporting model that has been utilized by the port since the last time we spoke. Mm-hmm. And basically, that was in busy season, and Greg was relatively new, and Wendy had not yet been hired. And so, as you might just to go through a little history, about 4 years ago, it might have been closer to five, the port, with the state auditor's urging, converted from accrual basis accounting to cash basis accounting. And the primary impetus for that was the fact that there's much less rigor in preparing the annual report on a cash basis versus what is required for accrual basis accounting. Larry and I, we've grown up with accrual basis accounting since we were kids, right out of college. Okay. But as you would listen to me go through the financial statements on the cash basis, most of what I was explaining was, well, this kind of looks, this is money coming in, money going out, and if we were to compare it to accrual basis accounting, here's the comparison. Mm-hmm. So I spent a great deal of time and effort talking about that because, you know, just because you paid a bill one day at the end of 1 month versus the next month, if it's your $50,000 insurance payment, kind of skews that particular month, et cetera. And so when Greg was hired, we had a discussion. One of his, you know, based on his experience and his level of expertise, we had a conversation about whether you would switch back to accrual basis. And we also, with that discussion, we talked about the level of effort it would take to do that. We have, and so, basically, since March, we've, not all of this happened over the past 4 months or anything, but with the target of having accrual basis statements for June, well, we spent a whole lot of time and effort getting there. And now, in your packet, we have a year-to-date financial statement up through June 30th, and then we have our July 31st financial statement, both accrual basis. However, the June statement does not include a monthly statement, and July includes the month and year-to-date. So, much effort has, as I say, over the past several months between Wendy and Michelle Ritchie, our staff accountant, who's worked with the port with me for a decade. She has, I think Wendy and Greg would agree, an awful lot of institutional knowledge because she's lived it and been through first the process of having accrual basis statements before, converted them to cash basis, and now has gone through the process of converting them back to accrual basis. So, that said, we are now going to review the accrual basis statement up through July 31st, 2019. So, little background, and hopefully I won't be talking about all the things that are out of whack. However, this is still a work in process. We're still refining inventory costing methods and trying to, because our margin is off for the month of July, but year to date looks okay. So, that said, the statement I want to really go through is the year to date July 31st. We have June in there, but that was really just getting things in ready to go for the financial reporting model. So, I was looking at the July statement, the third page, we have our accounts compilation report, and just to remind the commissioners, we compile the financial statements, whereas, remember, when the state auditor comes in periodically, every couple years, they basically take the annual report and opine on those financial statements, and that opinion is an audit report. Mm-hmm. But ours is simply a compilation and a certain level of service that we CPAs perform, and this is really the lowest level of assurance type of financial statement we do. We don't confirm accounts. We basically rely on the court's records, et cetera, but we don't get outside corroboration of amounts, et cetera. So that stated, our report does refer to the actually accrual basis financial statements, i.e. the balance sheet and the statement of operations. Before, we referred to the statement of assets and liabilities and statement of cash receipts and cash disbursements. All gone. So, progress. We still don't have all the footnotes to the financial statements. Those are done annually in conjunction with the annual report. And that said, as I was saying, these statements are still a work in process. Greg has given us also kind of supplemental schedules he would like included in our reporting package, that now that we've got the baseline accrual basis statements prepared, we will be then adding additional supplemental statements to these financial statements in the future to provide that information for him, more management reporting type things versus your plain vanilla balance sheet income statement. So it's not done yet, but at least we've got the accrual basis numbers established. Page 2 of the financial statements, balance sheet. As you might recollect from where we were on cash basis, we had about total assets of a little over $1 million. Well, we put all the fixed assets, all the marina assets on the balance sheet here. We've got inventories. We have accounts receivable. And so you can see the capital assets at $8.7 million. Down there we've got accounts receivable, primarily related to Kitsap Transit. The inventories, remember, those were never on the balance sheet, and we always had real funny margins when we look at the income statement. Well, that should refine itself over time. Anyhow, there's a real balance sheet with total assets of $10,600,000 versus just the cash assets that we had before. Next page, the liability side of the balance sheet, equity. Assets minus liabilities is your equity. Well, as you might recollect, cash basis, you had about $1 million of equity. Now you're at $8 million of equity because we put those assets on the balance sheet. Okay, they do exist. You've spent a lot of money maintaining them, putting on the covered mortgage, many, many projects I've been familiar with that I've seen over the years. And again, now we have accounts payable, i.e. bills that we've received and haven't yet paid yet. We've got up above under other current liabilities, tenant deposits, and we also have environmental liabilities. Those are the gas tanks that are underground over by the port office. That's the estimated cost to follow what the state wants you to do on their eventual cleanup. And that's an estimate. Financial statements have estimates in there. But There's no one, every year we go through and get an estimate of that, and you folks get it from a knowledgeable party. We still have the GO bonds payable on the balance sheet, but again, the most noteworthy item there is the equity that, basically truly reflects more of what the port's all about. It's a large operation and has significant assets. The current year, and we'll see that in a minute, through the 7 months, we have a loss of $103,000, but when we get to that page, on page 5, you'll see that that includes depreciation of $370,000. So, cash basis, we would have had income, but now we're actually taking a ratable portion of the cost of those assets and depreciating them. So, we'll talk about that in a minute. So, for the month of... Next page, page 4, for the month of July, we still are comparing things to the budget, because even though last October we adopted a cash basis budget, it's still your legal budget that was turned into the county, and really, especially throughout the year, our numbers really should be pretty close from an operating standpoint in terms of marina user charges, and property rentals, et cetera, margin on gas, et cetera, and so actually for the month of July, when you look at the first actual column, even with depreciation, you had net income of $64,000 and with $52,000 of depreciation, and so it was really from where you've been in the past, that's a pretty good month for the port, and your budgeted income was $31,000, so you were $32,000 over budget. Again, there's an anomaly in the statements. You'll see your fuel margin is $71,000. That number for the month of July is not correct. Mm-hmm. But we're getting caught up for some issues of making sure that at the end of the month, the gas tanks are cut off, when I say cut off, and measured to see what we have and actually stuck, or however that's done, to make sure that we basically have physical quantities of gas and diesel that are present in the tanks. And as you know now to do that, it'll help refine our margins on the gas sales. Mm-hmm. So physical inventories once a month at least, and you do that by a stick of the tanks. So, next statement, and by the way, we'll see on page 6 that the margin of the gas is out of whack when you look at that. But year to date, we look at it and we'll see that for the year, we've got $103,000 loss, page 5 of the financial statements. And the margin on gas for the year, $125,000. When we look at it on page 7, we'll see that the margin year to date, though, is about 12%, still a little bit too high. I know it's budgeted historically at about 10%, your gas margin, so, but not so out of whack as July was by getting that's really the roughest part of the statements that I see right now, is getting the inventories correct so that our margins are correct on the gas.
That's the right time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, having to cut off to make sure we've got all the bills in, that if it's an inventory, it's an accounts payable, that whole measurement process. Mm-hmm. You'll see, though, some anomalies that now exist since we had a cash basis budget, that if you look halfway down the page, insurance, well, you have actual costs year to date, $46,000, and well, there's no, on the budget shows nothing. That's because your insurance costs on a cash basis were budgeted by month, and there was nothing budgeted, up through July when you did the budget last year. Not that you didn't budget insurance costs, but it was probably in November or October. So that we still have some anomalies here when we compare actual results to the budgeted amounts. Aside from that, again, I would point out the $103,000 loss. However, depreciation, $370,000. So your income from operations before depreciation, $127,000. That's a good metric, and one of the reasons the depreciation, of course, is so high is all the improvements we've done over the past several years, mm-hmm. over $1 million to the covered mortgage. Well, that now gets depreciated over time, Remember, we just wrote it off when we paid the bills before when we were on the cash basis.
Yeah.
So now it's ratably expensed over its estimated life. And I can't remember exactly what that life is, but Michelle and I talked about that. So next page is again the schedule of the revenues for the month end of July, and down below again, our fuel margin is 26%. You don't have a 26% fuel margin, and that's has to do with the inventories, etc. But when we look at the year to date on the next page, it'll be fine. What I would point out, but one other thing I do want to point out on the accrual basis statements. Let's back up to page 3. We do have that we never had on the cash basis statement. As you recollect, Kitsap Transit paid you $1.3 million for prepaid rent.
Mm-hmm.
That now sits on the balance sheet and is amortized just like depreciation into income over the life of the lease. And so now when we flip back to page 6, you'll see Kitsap Transit under property rentals, right above the ferries, $2,000 of income. That's the monthly accretion of income that we take into income. I'm back on page 6 right now. And $2,031, whereas the budget amount is zero because that was never, it was taken into income, but it was paid on the cash basis.
Yep.
So that we still have these anomalies comparing things to actual to budget. Let's see. And I would flip over then to the next page. And again, you've got your actuals compared to budget. Marina user charges, $8,700 over budget. You know, income was, you would go through a pretty comprehensive process, I know, as you would set the budget. And when I look at some of these, the user cash basis versus accrual basis, you would expect those to even out. And then, that's pretty darn close. So within $8,000, you're over budget on your mortgage, et cetera. Property rentals are up, and of course, the parking, way over budget. I presume there's no parking spots here most days. And with the fast ferry, et cetera. Down below, we talked about that. Your year-to-date gas and diesel margin is $125,000. That's 13%, closer to the 10% that you would normally expect. Again, that will be refined in the future. Down below, your property tax payments are coming in just fine. $112,000, budget $110,000. We've got the operating grant. I can't remember which one that was, but anyhow, we've got that classified property. So I really think, again, we've gone through a pretty involved process converting things back from cash basis to accrual basis. And one of the things that we didn't do, because we knew this was possible, and also to get through the state audits, is that we've been maintaining depreciation schedules even though they weren't on the books. So we had that data, mm-hmm. We provided that to Greg and Wendy, mm-hmm. so that they've got that. So this isn't the end of the story, but we've certainly turned the corner, and I would expect things to be now running. What we want to do is get this so we've got it running like a machine, so that we get the data from the port, we can process it and produce the reports you want, and it's not such a big, it'll just become an automatic process, and there won't be so much pain and sweat to come up with the statements.
Yeah, I just want to thank Carson and Michelle, definitely, and Dennis and Wendy for, it's a heavy lift to convert. And to go back and forth, it is, it's not something I would never go back on a cash basis. I think that accrual just gives, I think accrual is just more meaningful data and information that the public can also, and normal businesses, which usually work off a GAAP, they'll be able to read those financials, because a lot of people don't actually work off a cash basis. Especially when you have a lot of assets and that kind of thing, or depreciating assets. So I just hope that it's really transparent for the public, that they understand what the condition of the port is going forward. And then, we'll add in some other information to make sure that also the commission, they understand what's happening with cash reserves. So when we're spending money, that's part of the ongoing where you say, okay, we're going to be spending this money. It's real money, and it's going out the window. Depreciation also is, in a sense, it's real money. But I, you know, what I do is I normally, like when I'm looking at analysis, I'll say, okay, I want to see what the income is, the direct income, and I want to see the non-direct income. What do those tally? What do they end up at? That'd be like positive $267,000 year to date. The depreciation schedule, I think we have to look at that. I think it might need some adjustment. Or be, I mean, there are some things in there which I don't know that I would actually ever even put them in. I would have expensed it. I wouldn't. It's too small. So it's whatever the rules and regs. But I'm a big believer in trying to pay as you go. Mm-hmm. And you live within your means, or live below your means if you can. And you know, a lot of people in the community do so, and I think they probably expect us to do the same. And so that they feel like we're really being responsible here. And I also really, and I know that we've been able to attain that, though some of these results with, because the staff did such a good job, and the staff stepped up. You know, we didn't backfill a couple of positions. We only had 11 people when I walked in the door. So when you lose two people and you don't backfill them, that means somebody's doing some of that work, maybe not all of it. But
yeah.
So again, I've said that before, but I think it's worth stating, because I think it's a good result. And then our cash reserves, you know, that's something I think that we'll report out on so that people can see, because we're at, I think, pretty close to 1.7 million now. And you have to have those reserves in order to be able to reinvest that and hit certain benchmarks so that you're financially sound. And so I appreciate all the work from everybody, and Wendy, I really appreciate all the work that you put into it, and I think it's really a good direction.
Yeah,
I
great.
Think it'd be more meaningful for you and for the commission to be able to make real decisions based on. It can be really tricky if on cash to really know what's going on. You have to know what's going out. It's just kind of like coming in and it's pay as you go. So if the money's coming in, you don't really understand that, hey, but you have all these bills that you can have to pay. Also, for example, if Washington State Ferry, they were in arrears right for a couple of months, that would go into your accrual base as you're seeing that, because you know you're going to get that income coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's up to us to make sure, otherwise it becomes bad debt.
Yeah.
But that's another thing, you know, we try to make sure we don't absorb any bad debt, because if you look at your total margin, if you lose $100,000 on something and you're only making 10% and you're at $2 million, that's $200,000. Well, $100,000 goes right off the bottom line. You're only going to have $100,000. So that's where really being careful about your business operations and not having bad debt, for example. And that's why some of the things where you have different vessels or there's liabilities, that's why it's really important that we manage that proactively. Yeah. So thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Dennis. Any other comments by the commission?
I do have a couple of questions. One is kind of a global question, back to what you said at the beginning here, that the state auditors that urged us to go to cash-based accounting because it was, sounds like, easier. I have trouble imagining anyone saying, from a state level, go to cash business.
This was, I remember the it was one of the finance officers meetings for port districts, and the CFO at the time, you might remember Scott, who'd worked on the, you know, down below, you know, he'd grown up here. I mean, he came back and said, well, you know, these three guys put on a show, and they said, you know, if we went to cash basis, and he was right, we don't need to do the management discussion and analysis, 3-year comparative financial statements, et cetera, if we're on cash basis, and we qualify as a small port because our gross receipts are under $5 million. And, you know, I can't, the direct executive director at the time, I can't recollect, but I mean, that was all run back through the state auditor's office, and that, you know, and yes, that was all true until the actual auditors came out and said, well, you switched to cash basis, this is no small port, and, you know, I mean, So certainly there was always some pushback when the actual people came out. But as I recollect, I think that conference was over in Chelan or someplace like that. I could go back and Mary, you raise a good point. One of the issues now is going to be when you go to do your annual report for 2019. There's going to need to be clarification of whether you're going to need comparative statements. That would be a accrual basis for 2018 and 17 also. So you're not out of the woods yet, but that's going to kind of be a management fight or something, whether we can just go ahead and do single year presentation because you don't want to, that's a mammoth task to go back and do that. That's really a big task. And for basically an administrative matter where you've already got a cash basis statement up through 2018, but that's a battle to be fought, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt.
Then I had two little,
sure.
What is this?
Yes.
Question. On page 6, retail sales, and it shows the cost of retail sales being...
Yes, there's another glitch. That was, again, for the month of July. There was a problem with the retail inventories. Wendy, you and Michelle talked about that. Year to date, I think that's been... If you look at the July statement, year to date, I think that's what we're looking at as a correction, a part of that process. But then when you look at the next page, the month of July, year to date July, that certainly makes more sense. But I think what we're looking at, and Michelle, in fact, I know she told me about this, that basically the correction was done in July, and so then year to date, up through July, with $4,300 in sales, cost of $3,000, retail, the net, $1,200, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, there's still a few refinements that were brought up.
And so on that same page, page 7,
yes.
At the very bottom it lists an operating grant.
Yes.
What is that?
That would be, we have several different types of grants, and frankly, I can't remember which one, but they're like the pump out grant that you get periodically.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that's an operating type grant that flows through there.
It's two different ones.
Yeah.
I think there is the actually, for the pump out, that's one where you get a grant. There's also an archival project. I think that fell under operating grant.
This is the archival grant.
The records grant.
Archival grant.
I can't remember if it's both items because I think there might be a little increment from the...
Right.
There's the archival, which is the bulk of it.
Yeah. And actually, Wendy could chase that one down.
But there's a little bit, really good, a little bit from the state on that other...
Good.
And of course, the idea is it's going to help your it's not for capital,
no,
it's for operating.
So it's pretty special.
Yeah.
It's unusual.
Yes.
That's great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Okay. So I'm going to go on to action items. Our first action item is resolution number 0801-2019, resolution to update the Visa credit card filed with Kitsap Bank. Someone have something to say about this?
A lot of times we use the Visa credit card in order to do like some basic daily transactions. We don't have accounts that we manage with a lot of different vendors. We do have accounts, but a lot of these are sent with sundries, and sometimes we could end up having to need a $5,000 credit limit could actually increase that, because we could have like an emergency repair that suddenly needs to be done, and it's usually operational costs that suddenly hit you, and then you got to go and take care of it. So, but we have a credit card basically in Juanita Gomez's name, and so we're switching it over to Ray Carpenter, the Harbor Master, since he's the one that's really approving almost all the purchases anyway. So that's basically what it is, keeping them operating.
So currently all three of the commissioners have signatory authority.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that changing? Doesn't look like it.
No.
Look like that remains. Okay.
No.
But when he does not need this right. Credit card.
We're just adding a new one, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
Well, I'll make a motion that we adopt Resolution 08-01-2019 for the update to the Visa credit card filed with Kitsap Bank.
And I second that motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next resolution is 08-02-2019, resolution to appoint a court auditor.
So we're required to have a court auditor, and when Juanita Gomez, the previous controller, was a court auditor, and so we discussed it with Wendy McDonald coming in as our new controller about transitioning it over, and we talked about what would be the timing of doing that. But I think that given Wendy's background, and also I'll let her speak actually to some of this so that she can engage with the commission. But I think it would be good. The key thing is the court auditor, they need to be able to stand separately and be able to have oversight if they have any concerns or any financial anomalies whatsoever, and be able to talk, reach out to the commission directly as well as the legal counsel. So it basically holds, it's another check and balance for myself or for anybody, and the commission, for anybody, because they'll go to the legal counsel as well. Mm-hmm. So you have, and what it does, and also to to the CPA or other outside sources. So what it is really an additional check and balance, but they have to be able to, they kind of take off their hat, so they're no longer necessarily an expensive controller, they actually have some, you know, management responsibility and oversight of the executive director. So that's critical to have that. So it's a check and balance on me and the staff and everybody, and that's how I think it everything should work. I always say it, I like to have a three-party. It's just a stronger balance than just having one person that makes a mistake. I can use their mistakes. But the key is that she can reach out to third parties and she has oversight of some of the any work that we do. And she also, what you discussed, you reached out to our legal counsel.
I did. I reached out to Frank Schmelick, our attorney, to be together to make sure that I understood what was happening, and he pretty much told me what Greg said, but I think the biggest thing I walked away with is that I was looking out for the port and ensuring that their financial decisions were good, sound decisions.
Yes, thank you. I know they were impressing on us at the last conference how important it was to have an auditor at the port, and since Wade is gone, it's really important that we do transition.
Our comments from the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Our comments from the floor. Welcome or not. It may just be at the public comment section.
Do you want to do it at the public comment section?
Well, I was just curious. So, Greg, are you the boss?
Yes.
So I'm seeing a conflict of interest. I mean, yes, you can say I'm taking this hat off and putting on the auditor hat, but there's a danger there.
There
I
is.
Would suggest.
No, there is. But I also think that if you look at like, there is absolutely, but that's where the auditor has direct discussions with the legal counsel, outside legal counsel.
Okay.
And
the org chart is set up that way to address that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
As a protection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing is to run into, so the reality is that it basically gives the controller or your CFO or whomever more authority and that they're basically on par. So they have to feel comfortable too to be able to reach out. And so there actually is things that you do as an auditor that are automatic checks. Okay. Usually you have kind of a protocol to basically just to be sure that everything is on the square. The thing is, they're also liable too. So there's a personal liability aspect to this. So at some point you're putting yourself out there in a really serious manner to make sure that there's oversight management. So
yeah, I would just not want you to feel like you were conflicted or kind of beating the sandwich.
But when we had that discussion,
that
exact discussion, as a matter of fact, I said you need to be, if I ever do anything that is not consistent or you don't agree with, you should disagree with me. In fact, I want people. So a lot of times the same thing happens though with contracts with vendors or whomever. With consultants, you can say to them, I want this answer.
Right.
And if I don't get that answer, you're gone.
Right.
And so frankly, that comes from whatever the style of management and the leadership and the integrity of the individual to some extent. But I also think that you can put things in place in order to keep everybody away from that kind of from that happening.
Okay, as long as everybody's comfortable with that. And certainly nobody knows the financial ins and outs better than you do, right? Well, I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another comment I'd like to make is that you mentioned several times that this is directly to the legal counsel, but actually
goes to the
controller, the auditor actually reports to us.
Yeah.
And so part of what I see here is an acknowledgement and a operationalizing a team that understands that we each have a role, that we each are watching the whole story, including each other, and that we're essentially saying, tell me I'm wrong, because if I'm wrong, I want to know and fix it.
Right.
And that's the culture.
Yeah.
So,
I was just concerned, not that I'm suggesting all pieces are at all, but just that you might put you in an uncomfortable position. So.
Oh, no, I'm happy.
But it's really important to acknowledge that, and also I think that it goes to the being able to have a dialogue with the commission too. That's why I think it's even more important, the same with having an open dialogue with the outside CPA firm too. So the more check and balances you have, to me, you don't have to just be trusting. You can say, hey, there's other people, we're all watching out here. So either it's a conspiracy that's across everything, but usually what it does is it really comes around to leading us to a better result and accountability and taking responsibility. We all have responsibilities and we have to assume. Yeah. I'm all about it.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I think that's the thing that we all have to keep being aware of. So thank you.
So do I have a motion on the floor? I don't yet.
I move that resolution number 08022019 to appoint Wendy McDonald as the port auditor for the Port of Kingston effective August 28th, 2019.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. We are at our time for another public comment session.
Oh, yes. A plaque for Ira Peters.
Plaque.
Doug Swanson's got one on a bench. We've got Tom Colton, he has a plaque on a bench.
Uh-huh.
Let's get one of those plaques for Ira Peters for the boat launch. For his graciousness of giving that boat launch to the people of the Kingston community.
And he was a commissioner, right? Was he?
No, he was a property owner.
Oh, property owner. Okay.
Thank you.
1959. 58. He stopped yelling at us in 1959 when he said that he was giving that boat launch to the community.
It's now time. Any more public comment?
I did want to ask. I don't think you stated your name.
Tom Curley. Yeah, I have a boat in the marina, although I'm not, I don't live in the district.
Oh, okay. Commissioner report. Mary?
Okay. I have three different things I'd like to comment on or report on. The first is that the Lindvog holding lot contract with Pertit Engineering to do the feasibility analysis of that. They're in the process at this point of evaluating ways to trim the budget somewhat and to very clearly identify in the contract that they will do the activities, the pieces of work required for a fatal flaw analysis within 60 days, and so that we have a chance then to say, is there anything to, does this work or not, before we spend a whole lot of money on implementation evaluation. So that's one thing. And they're going to pay particular attention to capacity analysis, how many cars can it hold, and do some kind of contrasting capacity analysis on some other approaches, just to get an understanding of what that site would do in the broader scheme of things. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The second thing is that I wanted to really compliment how staff has handled the whole issue about bottom painting and Department of Ecology and what our responsibility is and so on. I'm privy to a set of emails that are floating around right now about whether or not the port had exaggerated or was trying to keep people from painting their boats. I mean, some pretty kind of grim prognostications about our intentions. And the last round of conversation, the proponents are clear what they're allowed to do. They feel they've had a clear conversation with you, and hopefully we'll be able to move beyond that with people knowing what is required, and I appreciate it. I think when people apply a lot of force when they're trying to solve something, it makes it harder to solve, and so I appreciate that you keep your cool. That's really what it comes down to. And the third thing I wanted to mention is that the work with the Kitsap County's Kingston Citizen Advisory Committee, Transportation Subcommittee, is proceeding. I think one of the things that we're working pretty intensively on at this point is getting some clarity about who's working on what piece of the transportation story in Kingston. And there's a new committee chair liaison person, Svetlana Skalikin, who is working like mad to get up to speed. But I think it really promises to potentially be a more positive and constructive feeling, and it isn't just about feeling. Again, when people bash each other, everybody backs off, and so I'm really feeling like there's some opportunity to work more complementing each other, the different groups, everything from the stakeholders to the KCAC's Transportation Commission to the SF-104 Working Group. And each of these groups has more or less capacity on different issues. And so it's really important that there be integration. And very specifically, on September 19th, the KCAC has an open house called Discover Kingston in this facility that
the Linvog, the port, basically relating to the Linvog holding lot project, WSDOT relating to the realignment project,
yeah.
And Kitsap County relating to complete streets. Mm-hmm. These all affect each other, and you can't do any one of them without really paying attention to the others. And there's a strong sense that people in town need to understand what's going on. And it's easy to shine a light on anyone and not realize that, oh, wait a minute, you need to shine your light on that. So we're working to not only sort of co-locate those three entities in the open house, but also review each other's materials to make sure that there's nothing that confuses or misses an opportunity to explain the linkage. I specifically have kind of committed the port to providing an overall map of the community that shows where the projects are, mm-hmm. because surprisingly, that doesn't exist. So that's what I've been spending a lot of time on.
That's great. That's
thank you, Mary.
Well, I can segue on that a little bit because as the port's liaison, if you will, with the Kingston Citizen Advisory Committee, a couple of things were presented to that body, and Tom comes to those meetings quite often, which is excellent. One of the things is that the Storman's surface water utility in the county, Clean Water Kitsap, is again, I think most people are aware of this, but are proposing a water quality and treatment facility, rather state-of-the-art, in the port ground. So we just had recently adopted.
Where?
Here on the port property, yeah. Very similar to, be similarly located to where the swales are, mm-hmm. down by the little restroom that's down there. And with associated outfall, the outfall, as we understand, is going to change. But one of the members of that group, Jennifer Leach, is on a subcommittee for environmental review with the advisory committee. And so she had attended several of the previous meetings by the county. County, again, Clean Water Kitsap, which is the storm and surface water utility. And so they've made a presentation to, in this building here, in fact, in this room, here in July, and I had attended that. And then there was a report out that was provided to KCAC on the 14th, I believe. So Jennifer had then provided a little bit of information and insight into what that subcommittee would like to see, and she then would like to make a presentation and kind of a pitch to our group. I suggested, because the project really is at maybe a 10 to 30% design somewhere in there at this point. It's really not fleshed out yet to the degree that we'd expect any kind of decisions being made about the overall project, that we're going to have to come to one of our Tuesday morning work sessions and then have a discussion at that point, and then we'll advance that through. So
she represents KCAC?
She is a subcommittee representative, and just as Mary was talking about Svetlana, who is now leading that transportation subcommittee with the advisory committee. And again, the advisory committees are that mechanism for the whole body of the Kingston Advisory, Citizen Advisory Council to report back to the commissioner as well. So it's a mechanism for communication. So, and then on a side note of that committee and the transportation committee, I did attend a meeting on September 19th that Svetlana is also doing an evening meeting. So I went and attended that on the 19th, and there were only two other people there, so it was kind of a, you know, she's trying to get the word out because the people are busy and, you know, and essentially not available on certain nights. So this is the third Thursday of each month at the Pizza Factory. And so it's a meeting from 6:30 to 8:30. And so, again, they're trying to get the word out of what's happening with the transportation studies that are going on and some of the other concepts that are happening too. So we had a good meeting. I gave her some insights since I have been involved with the advisory committee. Prior to being a port commissioner, I had been one of the chairs of that committee for a number of years. So I was able to get her up to speed on some local people too. So.
Does the Stillwater people, they have any input in the water treatment proposal?
They won't. They may make comments about it once it gets to the point of it being a design element potentially. But I think that my understanding would be that Stillwaters would be very much in favor of something that's a water quality treatment facility. You know, at this point, it's more of a collection type of facility now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, anything else? I don't think so. I don't have that, anything else.
So, I believe it was Jennifer?
Jennifer. Yeah.
Yeah, that proposed this proposal for consideration and approval.
Yeah.
And it was really fascinating reading it over that she's pretty much in line with what we've already talked about, that we really were preferring that it not be an above the ground, really obvious.
This is about the treatment facility.
The treatment facility, yes.
That right. KCAC was kind of going to present to the port that, you know, that they would really like something that was a little bit more modest and not so out there, and that we would preserve the ability to have our port and to walk the port and to, there, I'll pass this around for you guys all, but it was really, it was a nice,
it was
really good. I was really impressed with it. And I was going to follow up with the statement that at the chamber luncheon on September 5th, there's going to be Tim Beachy and Angela Gallardo.
Gallardo,
thank you. That are going to be giving presentations. Tim Beachy in reference to the Washington Boulevard Improvement Project, and Angela in reference to the stormwater plan. So that's September 5th at 11:45 at the Point Casino and Hotel. And tomorrow night, I believe Derek Kilmer is here for an open house.
It's here, I think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Here.
At
6 or 6:30.
Or 6:30.
I don't remember which it is. But and then I also, Mary and I attended the Kitsap 2050. And I brought the brochure to give to Greg so that he could, it was the one thing that was interesting, I left my notes at home because there were like three or four things that were brought up at the beginning that I thought were telling about the population and what we should expect in the next few years, what's going to happen. And it's you know, going to be huge. There's going to be a lot more people, and there's going to be a lot more traffic. And the interesting comment, though, that the gentleman made was that he was talking about Snohomish, Kitsap, King, and Pierce County, that they get approximately 4.2 million travelers that come through that area every year. And in my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, that's about the same number of people that ride the Kingston Ferry every year. And it is the same number of people. So we're really hoping that they will stay cognizant and aware of Kingston and what's happening here and our needs. And hopefully we will be able to reach out to Puget Sound Regional Council in the future to help us with things if necessary, which I'm sure it will be. But I brought this for you, Greg.
So. Can I make a couple of comments?
Yes, please.
Hold it. Earlier we talked about the application to become members of the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. And we, aside from all the transportation issues that the KRCC is involved in regionally and locally, it also, the KRCC is going to be the location for the conversation about how much population is going to be allocated to Kingston. They have a new way of looking at population needs and realities, and it's really tied to how do you get to work, and which is really tied to transportation interaction nexus. And Bremerton is going to get a certain amount, Silverdale is going to get a bunch, but then there's another, I think, 34,000 people projected for the next through 2050 that the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council will figure out how much of that 34,000 goes to Kingston, to Bainbridge, to Port Orchard, and to Paulsbo. And that's going to be a really important conversation, because however much goes allocated to you, you need, the county needs, the community needs to provide the infrastructure that, you know, the roads, the sewer, the all the things, some of which we don't have any of, and some of which we have a lot, enough of, but not enough for a whole bunch more. I mean, we have good schools, et cetera. But that conversation, Kingston needs to be part of at the KRCC, at the Regional Council. And so I'm very glad that we're applying to be members. And there is very, very positive perspective that I understand is occurring within the Regional Council, the Kitsap Regional Council, looking at the fact that there's two ports in Kitsap, even though there's more ports in Kitsap than anywhere else. I think you can put the whole state practically together in most counties. But Port of Bremerton and Port of Kingston are the only two that are more than basically recreational marinas. And so there's a really pretty clear understanding that we're playing a role in this community, in a leadership role and a figuring out how to deal with the future role. And we started having, I think, really constructive conversations with leadership at Kitsap County to make sure that there are, that we do work together as this all unfolds, and that we can be an effective voice on behalf of this community. So thank you for letting me.
Excellent. That's good.
Yeah. We're going to move on to staff comments.
Hi.
Ray.
Ray for the board. So we had a meeting going on staff month. The last time I spoke, we got the yacht club painted, which is a positive. Had to come back down today, or they chose to come down today after we found a discrepancy, which was a missed area of not paint, no paint. So they're down there right now correcting that issue under a tight observation. Good things happened in the last couple weeks that I'm pretty excited about. We've been shorthanded for quite some time, as we all know here, and we've gone through a long, arduous process, and we found a couple employees that I feel are going to really fit the staff's needs around here. And one's an office personnel. She's going to fit in nicely. She's going to get trained, hopefully, properly to what our expectations are. I have a great outside maintenance lead that I have a lot of faith in. Obviously, he's going to have to look through my eyes and Greg's eyes to see what needs to be done around here. He's ex-Coast Guard. He's worked with national recovery, right? Isn't it national recovery? National response. So he's gone all around the United States helping out with fuel spills and stuff like that. He's certified in many areas, so I'm pretty excited to get him to even apply for the job, let alone accept the position of maintenance lead. Mm-hmm. So we did lose a very wonderful employee that I can't ever replace in so many ways, but we're going to pick up the pieces here. I've talked to him. I've sat down with Greg, and we're coming up with a maintenance plan here. It'll hopefully, after everybody's trained, it'll allow me to get back outside like I used to walk in the docks, you know, 20, 30 times a month. Instead of only the five times I have now, it's not really fair to everybody that's involved right now because I've been inside instead of outside. So getting these people put in place will allow me to do what I really like to do, and that's get out and walk the docks, see what maintenance needs to be done, see make sure tenants and us are all seeing the same thing, electrical cords, crab pots, make sure boats are running properly like they're supposed to. But we're just coming up with a game plan. I've already came up with it. I just got to implement it with his help, Greg's help. Obviously reach out to the tenants and make sure that they're good with it. And then we have to continue to manage our wonderful parking lot, as we all know. And that's always a day-to-day challenge, actually hour-to-hour challenge, if you will. But that's going to continue. We're just going to get better at it. We're going to have to reach out to the public and see if they have any types of ideas that could help us help manage that thing, because I'll tell you what, you know, I'm open to ideas. I know we all are, and we should just reach out to everybody that uses the parking lot to help make it better, obviously. We've been working really strong with Kitsap Transit recently, making that a good bond with them, myself and my staff, as far as their staff goes, and we're trying to be, you know, work in unison with each other and make sure that everything's good in that aspect, too. We're coming down to the end as far as the concerts go. We have one more band this Saturday night, and the tent won't be open. That's okay, because I got a full marina with a yacht club from Puget Sound Yacht Club. It's a lot of fun. Got a lot of big boats coming in. Got a lot of people been really trying to get in for the weekend, 4-day Labor Day weekend. Hopefully the weather's going to be acceptable. So, you know, if you can get something similar today, that would be nice. In that light, too, I just want to, you know, thank the commission, thank the staff, thank the public for coming tonight. And if you guys need me for anything, I'm approachable, so feel free.
Thank you, Ray. Wendy?
Well, I've been working on this very big project of cash and getting the June and July financials wrapped up so we can be back on track, so that when our September meeting, we're only looking at August. And I've also helped Greg with the Kitsap Transit fuel, what our costs have been, the revenue we've made from that for this year. I've been helping with the commissioner compensation table that I put together for all of you, and assisting Ray onboarding his two new employees that will be coming on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Oh, Tuesday and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And their names are?
Tori Grant and Faith Reese.
Mm-hmm. Tori is the maintenance lead, and Faith will be the port office assistant.
She's got her AA, she's working toward her master's degree right now, so she's got a lot of sparkle. Seems like a lot of energy that can really complement everything we have and hopefully bring even more. Like I said, I'm really, really happy to have the maintenance lead too. It's hard to replace Steve, but this gentleman's got a lot of aspirations and qualities that Steve brought to the table.
And they're both really excited to be here, to be coming and working with all of us. So
Great. Thank you, Wendy. Greg?
We're working on still building out the capital plan, you know, a robust capital plan, and then there's components of this that keep coming up. And so we're working on the stormwater plan, which also segues in with our dredge and Army Corps and eelgrass mitigation. All of these things are interrelated. All the capital projects and our budget and everything is kind of coming together, I think. I hope to have it all together by this point, but I think by the end of the year, I think that everybody's going to have a very, very clear picture of where the port is and where the port is hopefully headed. You know, we should have have a five-year plan, have a really robust budget. People can track, can ask questions, you know, you can examine it. I think all the financial report, I think everything that we're going to need for information that we provide the commission so that you can provide direction and you know what you have to work with, then I think that's my goal, is that you guys and the public can oversee everything that we're doing. You understand where we're headed, and we know where the horizon line is, and we know how we're going to get there. So we did meet with the Kitsap County just the other day. We did take a look at the stormwater regional plan. That's definitely a rough, I saw it was like a final plan, but I see that it is. I don't think it's at all anywhere close to being designed. The fact that we passed that, the commission passed that resolution, I think that was helpful for them, because basically the way that we wrote that resolution is somewhat open-ended to be able to try to, for the port to be flexible, to be able to come up with a solution with the county that's going to work for everybody, but not to hold it back, because it is pretty important to get that water treated, and it does actually help the bay pretty substantially. And I think, and so we are rolling that in with the Department of Ecology. I haven't talked to the Department of Ecology yet, but I will talk to the key person there. But we did talk to Army Corps of Engineers. We had a great discussion. And our argument is that also that stormwater plan has a 50-year or plus further along plan that's supposed to help us in the really long term. So that should serve as mitigation for a 50 or 100 year as well. So it should help us if we go to have to dredge out the marina here, which I believe that based on some of the information I'm starting to look at, we're really looking at the dredge plan, and it was supposed to be a second phase dredge that we need to go back and do. And looking at the what's happening in the marina, I think we're going to have to hit that head on and deal with it. But I think that overall, I hope that the county looks at the port as really being a true partner, and we can look to them as being a true partner with us. Same with Kitsap Transit. Looking at the fuel costs, we're going to give the executive director, John Clausen, over at Kitsap Transit a proposal for fuel contract. I don't have it. I spoke with our legal counsel today, in fact, and so we're going to try to get that drafted up. I'm going to try to get something over to them so they can make business decisions as well. I really want to thank all the staff. When you have growth like we're having as a result of Kitsap Transit, it's hard for transit. They're trying to respond, and their staff's responding as well as we're responding, and there's all this parking pressure that's going on. There's going to be all sorts of things changing. It's going to be changing rapidly in Kingston, and so that's going to increase more pressure, and that creates tension. So I think the thing is to manage as effectively as we can, try to be nimble and change. I just don't want to whipsaw the public or customers. We're trying to be consistent on how we're administering to things. And so I think sometimes people get a little frustrated. They want to see things change now, and or they've actually maybe been asking for it for decades, for that matter, in some cases. And it's not an uncommon theme. This is my 9th month here. But we also want to be careful when I make a recommendation or Ray makes recommendations, and when we're making recommendations to the commission, that it's not a knee-jerk reaction. There's usually reasons, good reasons, why things are the way they are. And so when you change something, it affects something else, and it could affect 5 things. And parking's a good example of that. So we just are going to have to go through, and we were understaffed, so to do some of some data collection and the way that we have information, it's not in a form that's as easily usable, frankly. There's going to be a lot of pressure on that parking, and there's going to be conflicts. There's going to be user conflicts, especially at peak periods, and nobody likes it, but we do try to actively manage it, especially when the boats are trying to come in for a quick opening, whether it be wreck boats, whether it be commercial vessels. They're all important to us, and we just try to work with everybody. But we're open to, we do hear you guys when you say things, and we understand that. It's not like we're ignoring it. And then there are some constraints that we don't like, but they're part of the deal. We accept state money for that boat ramp, and that's recreational. We have to respect that, and there are people that hold our feet to the fire on some of those issues, but I don't look at everything as an either or. Got to come up with a solution that works for everybody. Part of it is be patient, get along. We've had a couple complaints about parking. We've also had a lot of compliments about a lot of things, and I hear a lot of good things about the staff has definitely tries to put themselves out there and does try to find a solution to work with people and make it a really great place to come to. And I think that we had a lot of people help us with the centennial, and I hope we keep that energy and that kind of that positive going forward and building those relationships, because a lot of these things are all new for me. Some of you have years and years and decades of experience working with it, but it's new for me, and so I'm navigating that. So I just want to thank everybody that's helped us and helped me transition into Kingston. It is a really wonderful community. So.
Thank you, Greg. Our next regular meeting is, we're changing the time on it. It was going to be scheduled for September 25th at 1 o'clock, and we are changing it to September 25th at 9 a.m. due to the fact that the commissioners will be going out of town on a conference that afternoon. So it's September 25th at 9 a.m. So I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 7:58.
Why I present myself the way I do, a traumatic brain injury and mortar round. And I don't know if you guys know it, but I want to thank you for your patience with me, and I'll write this up and send it out to you so that you know officially.
We love you.
Do
you need a motion to adjourn?
Oh,
I thought
we did.
Did we do that?
Oh,
hang on a second.
I know. I thought that was in the way.
I'm sorry. Okay, hang on a second. I can't get it to come back. Here we go. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Yes, I move we adjourn the meeting.
Greg, if you need.
And I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passed. Meeting adjourned.